Hello and welcome to CICK News. CICK News is your local and regional news coverage provided by me, Pamela Hassan, and Dan Messick for Smithers Community Radio. This news program is funded by the Community Radio Fund of Canada and the Government of Canada, and our aim is to provide local coverage on stories that affect the lives of Northerners like you. Jonathan Cooper began his career in healthcare for the National Health Service in the United Kingdom. He's an example of someone who is interested in working abroad to experience a different lifestyle, one that gave him more space, a shorter commute to work, and access to the great outdoors. So he moved to Terrace and has been working in healthcare for 16 years. Jonathan is the Health Service Administrator for Terrace and Stewart for Northern Health, and I'm speaking to him from the new Kaisian Regional Hospital in Terrace. Kaisian is more than twice the size of the previous facility, Mills Memorial, and has 82 beds, private rooms, a bigger emergency department, including two trauma bays, six stretcher bays, pediatric care space, and four operating rooms, as well as the latest diagnostic imaging equipment. This hospital serves as the primary healthcare hub for northwestern British Columbia, including communities in Terrace, the Nass Valley, Canyon City, Greenville, Gitanmax, Gingalee, the incorporated community of Thornhill, and others. The hospital opened ahead of schedule. Initially, construction was anticipated to be complete in 2025, but construction ended ahead of schedule and doors opened to the public on November 24th. I'm speaking to Jonathan now about the new facility and services offered, as well as the challenge of staffing this new facility. What were your first impressions and how did it feel to be in the new facility?
I think the biggest thing that people notice when they come in the doors is the space and the daylight, the windows, a lot of thought to the design of some of those things. And certainly for patients to make those patient care areas the most appealing with lots of daylight, ease of access. Obviously, it's an accessible hospital. And bright and open spaces, the colors are, I think, is another feature of those patient care areas as well. I think that's probably the most noticeable thing. The other key areas for the patient care clinical areas are the number of ceiling lifts in the different spaces for the benefit of patients and staff, because obviously, as we know, moving patients is a potential risk for people's back injuries, for example.
I'm wondering, with all of these new trauma services and radiology and pathology labs and departments, how is Northern Health managing the low numbers of new healthcare workers to populate these hospital areas?
So the approach to this has always been that we would open X number of beds depending on the staffing levels, for example. And we would also, with some of the new services as well, because we do have some new programming that's still happening that takes some time to build, that we would take a phased approach to how we approach this based on staffing, because clearly staffing is really important for the clinical areas particularly, but also others. So that's the approach we've taken. It will be a phased approach. We are getting interest from staff, from new applicants, which is really positive as well.
So it's a field of dreams. You built it and now they're starting to come.
Yeah, we always hoped that obviously a brand new hospital would be a key factor in interest to people looking for positions and looking to move from elsewhere potentially to the area.
The hospital is also a training site for medical students. And I'm wondering, do you think this new facility will inspire or attract more new trainees in healthcare sciences in the north here?
Yeah, we're very hopeful of that. We do have close ties with UBC and the medical programs. There is an existing footprint, and there has been for some time, even in the old hospital, and certainly a lot of activity with physicians in community that play a key role in some of that work. Certainly having new facilities, which have been expanded in that area as well, thinking about students and making them feel welcome, giving them places to work when they're studying. And obviously part of that as well is the simulation labs that we have in the new facility as well. So if they wanted to go through patient scenarios, for example, with an educator to simulate a particular scenario with a patient, then all those facilities are really important to training of new clinicians. And as we know, in the rural environment, the family physicians often will do primary care and hospital work as well, which I think so here from physicians and from students. So that is a key area of interest in the north, where people are able to provide family care, but also explore some different interests they may have within a hospital setting as well.
With the new Seven Sisters facility that was built and now Kaisian Regional, Is Terrace sort of positioning itself as maybe a regional hub from like Kitimat to Smithers for health services in the north?
Yeah, I think Terrace has naturally played a regional hub, not just for healthcare, but for other services. Certainly, the idea of the facility is not to replace those other areas. It's certainly to work as a system, and that's really important in the province for different health authorities as well as Northern Health itself to work as a key internal system where different partners and different facilities support each other for different services and different levels of acuity in services as well. That really is key. And some of the regional programs, for example, orthopedics, where we have orthopedics located in Prince Rupert and Kitimat currently. Terrace is planning to develop an orthopedic service in the future. That work is underway, but that work will fit into the regional program as it is now. Clearly, there are some services, for example, that aren't available in the Northern Health region, and we would need to access services in the Lower Mainland, some key specialist tertiary services, for example. And also, when people come for specialist diagnostic tests between different Northern Health facilities, that is an important key part of the system.
Speaking about that specifically, have you increased testing equipment such as MRI machines or CTs
Yeah,
or
so we have updated the equipment, but the services themselves are pretty much the same in terms of the diagnostic equipment. What I can say, though, is the new department amalgamates all the different elements of those services in one area of the hospital, whereas before it was more distributed in the old hospital.
is Kaisian, is it going to offer rehabilitation and detoxification services for toxic drug overdose?
So I think there's two pieces to that question. So obviously there is a lot of work with the province and health authorities still to address the issues across the province. We know that is a significant challenge and has been for some time, the opioid crisis. There's different parts of a patient's journey. So obviously there's an acute phase which may require medical treatment. It may be that the person is found down and they have medical treatment. They need to be in hospital for that period of time. We've always offered those treatments. The challenge may be after they finish that phase, especially with substance use disorder, where they need to make some choices, but they also need to have some supportive wraparound services to manage that. Now, there are a variety of community services which are still being developed to support some of that. But obviously, as we hear frequently, there is a lot of discussion around an inpatient setting type of treatment environment. What I can say is there is a lot of discussion about what that might look like in Terrace in the future. There are certainly outpatient treatment options and community-based treatment options that do exist in Terrace and some of the surrounding areas as well. And I think that is always an area of work that's underway to try and improve some of those services for those people. We recognize that's a significant challenge.
What about specifically oncology testing and cancer testing? What about that? Are there new or more facilities, or is it much like what you're saying that it's spread out now? The areas are just easier for people to do more of the testing, which Terrace Hospital has always been delivering.
Yeah, so oncology has always been a key regional resource in Terrace. The oncology clinic here does provide some treatments that aren't available at some of the other centres. Again, that largely comes back to some of the diagnostics testing, some of the clinical capacities, nursing coverage, for example, and also the fact that there has to be specialist mixing of some of the medications by specialist pharmacy, and the pharmacy services have been updated year two to reflect that, particularly relating to chemotherapy mixing. That is another key update for the current building here. Again, those oncology services do work as a network through the province, and BC Cancer also plays a key role in some of those things as well. So I think, again, good to think of that as a network of services. There are different levels of oncology clinics across the north. Terrace is one that does quite a high level of particular treatments. And it does support some of the other units as well.
Mills Memorial, the old hospital, is underway to being decommissioned and soon after demolished. After that, the space will become a parking lot for the new facility. And Jonathan wanted to champion just a few more elements of the access to services offered at Kaisian for our listeners.
So I guess I could just relate again to another design element in the building is particularly an emergency department and also the new ambulatory care department, which is essentially an outpatient department that brings together a lot of services that did exist in the previous hospital, but in one space. And that would be where also there would be the visiting specialists would work from. Key feature for the outpatients and ER that the cubicles now have walls between them rather than just curtains. Again, there was some design principles around extra privacy.
Thank you so much. I'm sure you're so busy, and you're probably also too, just really, I don't have to assume, I guess I could ask if it just how it like if it just feels really great to be working in the new facility, or are you not in the, are you working out of the new facility?
Yes, I am in the new hospital. I'm in the administration department in the new hospital, and it is great with the light, the daylight, especially at this time of year when we can see the mountains, and when we get a nice sunny day like we have today. And certainly the space here and the colors, and I think being able to see the building come to life, having spent a lot of time in the building in the lead up to the move, when we had a lot of activity just last phases of construction and so forth. It's nice to see the place come to life now. And the people, certainly the people are what makes this a hospital, and certainly really important. We couldn't have done the move as successfully as we did without those key people involved. And certainly, but my hats certainly go off to the staff involved and the
So,
physicians, of course.
yeah, totally. It takes a village, right? And when you want to make such a big change in something that's been anticipated and long awaited too, there's a lot of pressure to get it right and get it done on time. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you. It's very nice to be in the new building.
My colleague Dan Messick spoke with newly elected Conservative Skeena MLA Claire Rattay about the opening of the new Terrace Hospital as well. Here's that interview.
Claire, mental health and addictions kind of builds into that framework of healthcare. We have seen just now the opening of the newest hospital in BC in Terrace. It's a three times the size of what was there before. So it's a pretty big deal for the city and the region there around Terrace, but also for the Northwest in general. You know, this is going to be a central hub. I already have friends of mine who've told me they're headed there for MRIs. You know, so clearly things are slowly getting up to speed. But obviously, we've had some healthcare challenges in these last number of years, coming off the pandemic, and it seems that we're still seeing, you know, the closures of emergency rooms. You know, limited hours, difficulties getting family doctors, all this business. How are you going to advocate to ensure that the healthcare for a facility like this brand new hospital is dealt with more holistically and to the best of the abilities for what taxpayers are looking for?
Well, I mean, first of all, it's great to have the new hospital. I think everybody's looking forward to that. It's certainly a huge bonus. It's something that was desperately needed in the area. But, you know, you approach it still the same as we were approaching it before the new hospital. There's still a lot of gaps in our healthcare system that need to be looked at and they need to be approached. And just getting this new hospital isn't enough. There's still a lot of advocacy that needs to be done. You know, in the Kitimat Hospital, for example, the ER has already been closed more than 800 hours this year. With the issues that we have with the highway between Kitimat and Terrace, that's just unacceptable that people are expected to go out there. You know, there's been certainly some oversights, I would say, just in the sense of certain things that haven't been done that should have been done before this hospital was open. I'm dealing with one constituent right now that has to travel out to the hospital in Terrace 3 times a week for dialysis, and he's an elderly man, and he has to take the Skeena Connector bus. And the bus stop currently stops on Hogland Street, which was great for the old hospital because you just had to walk across the street. But now he has to walk 4 blocks and, you know, in snow and ice and all the rest of it this time of year to access the new hospital off of Tetrault Street. So we've been calling people within Northern Health, and I'm going to be getting on the phone with some people from BC Transit today to talk about where that oversight is, because when he said, you know, I can't, the poor man can barely walk. He's using a cane, and he called and said, I can't walk these 4 blocks. What's going on here? And they said, oh, it's going to be about a year before we're going to be able to move that bus stop. And it broke my heart because he just said to me, I'm not going to be here in a year. That's not good enough. So there's certainly been some oversights. We don't want to see just entire centralization of our healthcare services only in Terrace. That's not good enough for the people living in Kitimat and Prince Rupert and Smithers. And, you know, we need to ensure that this hospital is functioning well and those little kinks get worked out as quickly as possible. But we also need to advocate for the services within the other smaller communities, because we don't want to just see centralization. It doesn't work up here in the north. The highways are too dangerous to be going on them in the middle of winter for a lot of people. And, you know, we need to do better and make sure that those services are available to people within their communities as much as possible, or make it easier to be able to access this hospital in Terrace.
Claire, just the last thing for you, you know, now that this is in place and you're kind of getting into your role as the MLA, it looks like the legislature won't be recalled until February. What are kind of your priorities for the next couple of months?
Yeah, it's going to be doing a lot of the same things that I've been doing over the last few weeks, meeting with different community groups, meeting with constituents, hearing about the problems, knowing what I need to be focused on when I go into this sitting, right? So, really, it's just community engagement. We're also in the process of getting our offices set up, so hopefully those will be open shortly so that we can, you know, have a place for people to know where they can go to access me and sit down and talk with me when they need to. But a lot of it's just going to be community outreach, community engagement, and obviously just learning the ropes of what my job is going to entail here. You know, there's really very much so two sides to this job. There's you're sitting in the legislature, but there's also the work within the community that you need to do. You need to be able to balance both of those, which is always going to be harder for these northern ridings because it's a lot more travel time to get back and forth. So finding solutions to that problem, whether that's some sort of a hybrid model where I can set up, you know, a Zoom call with constituents, even if I'm in Victoria, so that they can have that time to be able to speak to me face to face about the problems that they are facing. But that's going to be the big focus is really just obviously learning the ropes, doing that community engagement, and also balancing that with my portfolio as a critic. I'm probably going to have to do a lot of travel throughout the province because, you know, the issues, even though this is a very large encompassing issue, the issues are slightly different in each community as far as how they are approaching the issue around mental health and addictions, you know, what solutions they've found or what hasn't been working. So really getting a broader understanding of that. So that's probably what my next few months are going to look like.
Okay, Claire, we'll leave it there for now, but thanks so much for giving us the time and insight. And I look forward to speaking with you again.
Great. Thank you, Dan. Appreciate it.
The following portion of the news makes reference to a violent act in history toward women. Listener discretion is recommended. Women in STEM face numerous challenges when it comes to the workforce, including hiring bias, harassment, and toxic work cultures that don't support their growth. And women make up less than a quarter of the workforce in technology in Canada, according to a System Analysis Program survey. Also in that 2022 survey, nearly half of female students and young professionals recently polled said that they don't believe that tech companies really want to hire them. Companies such as Move the Dial, formed by a Toronto lawyer, Jody Kovitz, aim to bring more participation and leadership of women in the tech sector by connecting founders and funders, along with networking, support, and skill-building opportunities for technical women. The success rates and grasp of young students who are exposed to STEM learning in school are not unequal by gender. Girls and boys grasp the concepts equally. Women who choose to rise to the challenge and pursue a STEM career are in the minority still, and events in Canada's past point to a darker time when 14 women who entered the field of technology were met with brutal violence. Tomorrow is the National Day of Remembrance and Action on Violence Against Women, a day commemorated in Canada each December 6th to acknowledge the anniversary of the 1989 École Polytechnique massacre in Montreal, where 14 female students were targeted and killed on the campus, and another 10 women were seriously injured. Today, I want to honor the work of women and non-binary people who thrive in STEM, even when they weren't accepted as equals, by sharing an interview with a young Métis student at the College of New Caledonia who just received the BC Scholarship Society's Award for Indigenous Women in Technology. This civil engineering student has got her eyes on building a better future for herself and young Indigenous women, paving the way to become the future champions in technology for all.
Hello, my name's Michelle. I'm currently a second year student in the Civil Engineering Technology program at the College of New Caledonia. I am a Métis woman and I'm quite enjoying living in Northern BC.
What was it in your childhood that kind of made you decide that you wanted to build things for a career? Why civil engineering?
I always thought engineers were fascinating. Whenever I'd see them on TV or I'd be talking to someone and they'd tell me their occupation, I always thought, wow, that's amazing. I'd love to be able to do that one day. But I just never thought I had the capabilities to do. And then one day I decided that I wouldn't know unless I gave it a shot.
We're speaking about this scholarship that you just received, and it's for academic excellence. But also, was there like a project that you did that pushed your name to the top of this list to receive this scholarship?
I think they choose their winners based on their academic performance, but also their unique narratives. So when you fill out the application, you have to answer a series of questions and write an essay question, and whatever they feel stands up to them the most, they select their winners based on that.
Okay. And how does it feel for you to be acknowledged with this scholarship?
It's amazing. It's an incredible gift to be able to concentrate on my studies, but it also gave me the confidence in my ability to continue with the program. I struggle a lot with self-doubt still, but it also provides a potential pathway to act as a role model for future women who might be considering a career in STEM.
Yeah, actually, that's a really nice segue into my next question. Why do you think it's important to be vocal about being a successful young Indigenous woman in tech? What do you think that your success makes possible for the young Indigenous girls, the generation after you, who are in elementary or high school now, for them to see you succeeding in engineering and technology?
I think it's important to serve as a role model because, you know, if you research Indigenous women in STEM-related fields, there's not a lot that's known for history. So by serving as a role model, we can kind of contribute together and overcome any obstacles and create some success.
How does your family feel about you receiving this award?
Been incredibly supportive and excited for me. They're incredibly proud of me for winning this award, and I'm grateful that they are giving me this ongoing support to continue.
So, Michelle, I'm not sure if Jesse shared this with you, but December 6th is actually this day of remembrance for action of violence against women. So in 1989, at École Polytechnique in Montreal, women who were in the technology field at Polytechnique were targeted and violated. I'm not sure if you know about that. But one of the reasons why I wanted to speak to you was to really just champion that women are out there looking for these opportunities and can and will succeed in them. So do you have any feelings or sort of sentiments about why this matters to you and how you sort of overcame those challenges, fully aware that you are, yeah, you're a bit of a rarity?
It is challenging, you know, to go, it can be scary to go into something where it's unknown, but I think it's important for women to continue to join these technology fields because with more women, we have the advantage of fighting the discrimination, potential violence. And when we act together and provide more role models, then it encourages more women to pursue this type of career.
Absolutely. Well, I just wanted to say congratulations on this really well-deserved scholarship. My only last question is, what's next for you?
So the technology diploma, I'll be graduating next spring. And then I was considering bridging into the university up north here to go into the degree program. But I'll probably take some time to work and get some more hands-on knowledge prior to transferring.
Absolutely. Is there something that you'd want to do specifically?
I'm finding a lot of it pretty fascinating. Civil engineering is such a broad discipline that it encompasses so much. I've been enjoying the study of like hydraulics and hydrology, and I also enjoyed some geotech from my first year. And this year we're learning more about municipal design, and we're going to be learning stormwater management next semester. So I'm not too sure which direction I want to take, but it's all very exciting.
Michelle, listen, it's really cool that you made the time to speak with me. I'm sure you got lots of requests. So, yeah, thanks so much for talking with me.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks again for tuning in to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at skeenastrong.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify,